getting a view into the locker room that you don't normally see.
A sanitized view.
Not a natural scorer,
the honest opinion. He's not doing the job that they hired him to do.
I just disagree.
Accelerating your hockey learning curve. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning, TSN1290.ca. Good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A beautiful July 11th morning. A happy folk festival if you're on your way out there today. Always a nice weather for the folk festival, it looks like. But always time for a couple hours worth of hockey talk here on TSN 1290. Alongside my colleagues Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell, and this is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Joining us on the program this morning, we're going to hear from Jeremy Rutherford of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, talk about the St. Louis Blues, their signings and trades, and all sorts of activity in St. Louis. George Johnston from the Calgary Herald's going to join us, and we're going to be joined by concussion researcher Stephen Dubienski from the University of Manitoba in the second hour. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is illegalcurve.com. We start this morning, though, with Richard Pollock, my colleague on this fine program, put together a tremendously insightful piece about Andrew Ladd and the fair market value for the Winnipeg Jets captain, as he is less than 1 year away from unrestricted free agency. And I've tweeted out the article by our Twitter feed, at Illegal Curve. You can also find the article on illegalcurve.com. We'll spend the first part of the show discussing that article and trying to come up with the answer, or analyzing Richard's answer, about what, in fact, the fair market value of Winnipeg Jets captain Andrew Ladd is on the open NHL free agency market. Good morning, gentlemen. Good to see you both.
Drew, good to see you.
Ezzy, good to see you.
Yeah, good to see you, boys.
That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like to see you. There's
a lot going on.
Yeah, a lot going on is right.
Cup was in Winnipeg.
It was.
Could still be in Winnipeg.
I think it probably would still be in Winnipeg, at least till the morning.
Big win for the Bombers last night.
Yeah. Solid effort.
And like you said, it's probably the nicest day of the year out there. So
let's get going.
Yeah, let's do it.
The fair market value of Jets captain Andrew Ladd there, Richie. So it's a tremendous piece. Well done for you on that.
Thank you.
Ladd, of course, coming off of a 5-year, $22 million contract that he signed with the Jets just after the team came here to Winnipeg from Atlanta. You know, Andrew Ladd is sort of, would you say it's somewhat fair to say that he's sort of underappreciated in the NHL circles for what he brings to the team on a night-in, night-out basis?
I don't know if he's underappreciated. I mean, it's a good question. I think that's a good starting point. I think teams know what he brings to the table. I mean, he's clearly lining up against the other team's top players most nights, so mm-hmm. The other organizations are aware of, you know, his presence and what he can do. Now, on the other hand, the other team's best players are going to play against the Jets' best players, so he could be the best player in the Jets and still not a player as maybe well-regarded as you're kind of alluding to there. So, you know, the stats indicate otherwise, and I think that's a starting point for Andrew Ladd's camp, you know, J.P. Barrie, and the argument that they're going to be making to Kevin Cheveldayoff, or probably are making currently to Kevin Cheveldayoff, is our client puts up top-line point totals in the National Hockey League for a winger and should be paid as such, never mind the fact that he's the captain, he has a close relationship with a lot of the top guys on the team. He's a core player. He came to Winnipeg, as you mentioned, in 2011, checked out the city, basically gave it a seal of approval for his teammates, signed the contract, committed long-term. He's been all-in on this organization, and now he's looking for that big all-in contract from the organization to him to essentially take him to the latter part of his career.
You know, when you went through the exercise, and I mean, I guess we should probably start with the thought or the perception that maybe Andrew Ladd is only as good as his teammates around him. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of how you started the column, talking about, and you really broke it down quite well and in quite a easily digestible method. You looked at Andrew Ladd when he plays with Brian Little. You looked at Andrew Ladd when he plays with Blake Wheeler, mm-hmm. And you looked at Andrew Ladd when he doesn't play with either of those players. And what you find there is you have really quite a consistent player, regardless of who his line mates are. Now, for the most part, of course, you know, Little, and Wheeler, a little bit less so Wheeler this past year, but for the most part, Little and Wheeler and Ladd have been a trio.
Yeah.
But there are certainly occasions when he doesn't play with those guys, and you pretty much see the same Andrew Ladd regardless of who he's playing with. And that jumped out to me in the article as a significant factor.
And you don't see the drop-off in his play.
Right.
As you might in some of the other guys. Now, of course, there's context there, who they're playing with and where they're playing and all that stuff. But, Drew, I think it is an important point, is that he's not reliant on one particular player. I think, you know, and we get a little bit deeper into the article in terms of Brian Little and Andrew Ladd and who relies on, you know, one more than the other. I think they kind of complement each other, I think, is really what you get from it. But the point, I guess what you're trying to make is, you're not throwing a guy like Andrew Ladd on a line with, say, Wayne Gretzky. Or, you know, it's not a Rod Brown, Mario Lemieux kind of thing where he's riding the coattails, and as soon as he would switch from a line, his point production would dwindle. So I think he's one of the driving forces of the squad, and that's indicated in the stats. I think Paul Maurice, and that's a thing, Paul Maurice and the general manager, Kevin Shovdaff, would be able to tell you that too.
And Richie, I think, you know, when Drew talks about Andrew Ladd being underappreciated or underrated, I think you could say he is in the sense that as a captain of a team, as opposed to a Jonathan Taves or Sidney Crosby or an Alexander Ovechkin, he is probably a second-line left winger on a really good team, maybe even a third-line left winger on a really stacked team like he was in Chicago. But when Andrew Ladd offers the Winnipeg Jets, Richie mentions that, you know, he's a core player. The captain of this team, a guy who has got so many big goals for the Jets over the years, and I know over the years the leadership of this team has been in question, and I think, you know, Richie and I have talked about this quite a bit on this show. When you're winning, those leadership issues seem to never be there, and when you're struggling, those leadership issues are always seem to be in the headlines, right? And you have a guy like Blake Wheeler who I think over the last 2 years has kind of picked up that leadership slack, but it's always been Andrew Ladd that's driving the bus. The team really has taken on his identity. Andrew Ladd's a blue-collar player. He's never going to be, he was never even 5-6 years ago going to be an 80-point player. But for a first-line left winger on the Winnipeg Jets, he's done his job. He goes out there every night, and, you know, you could criticize sometimes, you know, he might take some bad penalties, or, you know, you might need a little bit more physicality or intensity out of Andrew Ladd. But for the most part, he does whatever it takes. If it's getting a goal on the power play, even dropping the gloves sometimes, I think his worth, and I think Richie was bang on in his assessment of what Andrew Ladd's going to get, a guy that's 30 years old and has basically busted his butt every game for the Jets, and he hasn't missed a lot of hockey, which is something that you touch on in the article, Rich, which is really important. Mm-hmm. I think he's a guy that deserves to get a long-term contract and probably finish his career as a Jet.
Since becoming an NHL regular, Andrew Ladd has missed a grand total of 6 games.
It's incredible.
That's an incredible stat.
Yeah, it's 6 games in the past, since 2008?
And Rich,
yeah.
he doesn't play a light style of hockey. I mean, Andrew Ladd blocks shots. He hits. He drops the gloves. Like
6 games in 7 years.
That's right.
I mean, that durability. I mean, there's players who are injury prone, certainly, and there's mm-hmm. players who are durable. Mm-hmm. But given his style, you know, where...
His style has changed over the years, but I agree with that.
You know, that he's certainly not afraid to go into the corners, right, and he's certainly not afraid to lay a body check.
And go to the front of the net, as documented, too.
That's right, and you mentioned the front of the net where he's, you know, he's quite adept at, you know, you talk about, you go into, what's it called, Hextali?
Hextali, yeah, and it's
you know, why don't you talk about that a bit?
Well, you know, Drew, I think what you want to look at it is, where do you create your opportunities? And are you able to, you know, to generate chances from areas that have a better chance of scoring? And are you able to also outchance your opponent and outshoot your opponent? Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So basically, I can kind of give you the description of it. Basically says that when Ladd is on the ice, the Jets are able to generate a lot more average, better than average rate of shots in all different parts. And they break it down. So they break down the offensive zone into different parts.
They
of the
sort
ice.
Of take the offensive zone and put it into a grid almost.
That's exactly what it is. And from everywhere, they're able to generate more, better than league average shots on the opposition's net, including the really important, you know, slot area.
Right, the red zone where you would expect most of the goals to come from, within a couple feet of the goaltender.
And just to know, like, the Jets, when he's not on the ice, have been below average. So just in context, the Jets have been below average at doing that.
Mm-hmm. Below league average, yes. when he's not on the ice,
yes,
in
exactly.
terms of generating quality scoring chances from in close.
Well, that's quality shots, and then you get your scoring chances as well. And to boil it down, I was talking to Troy and Matt about that this week. He outchances the opposition. And you know, just logically, you outchance the opposition, you're going to likely outscore the opposition.
Sure, generally speaking. And going back to, you know, going back to what we said earlier, When you talk about opposition, he's not going up against the team's second or third pairing. You look at the, you know, you broke it down by the quality of competition.
He's playing against the other guys' best, but, you know, sometimes they get the second pairing, but it's first or second pairing. He's not playing against the third pairing guys.
No, if he's on the ice against the third pairing guy, that's an advantage that Paul Maurice, yeah, that's right,
exactly.
Where somebody's trapped on the ice and everything else. He's, you know, he goes up against the quality of competition. The other team's best quality of competition. Now the goal scoring, I mean, you know, we can talk about his point total. So 46 points in 48 games in the lockout shortened year, 54 points in 78 games, two seasons ago. And then last year, his best, statistical year in the NHL, 62 points, in 81 games.
And as you see, he generated a ton of shots, guys, mm-hmm. 224 shots. And he played in all situations as he has the past 3 years. So he's playing even strength, as you were talking about before, penalty kill and power play. Generating a ton of shots, gets 24 goals, a fair amount on the power play, and he puts up assists. I mean, and he's playing every game, missed one game.
Right.
You're kind of getting a jack of all trades there.
I want to talk about the shots. You just mentioned that because his shooting percentage, we saw last year mm-hmm. or just in this past offseason, Matt Beleski signs a decent contract with the Boston Bruins after having a good year in Anaheim, scoring, you know, like double digits in goals with a very high shooting percentage.
He also was playing with Getzlaff and Perry.
Certainly that helps matters a lot as well.
For sure.
Now, you know, Andrew Ladd is a guy whose shooting percentage this past season was actually lower than his typical shooting percentage, where he scores on between 10-12% of his even strength goals.
That's right.
So next season, if all other things being equal, and that's always, you know, the caveat you have to place on this sort of thing.
Yeah.
Next season, if he gets back up to 10%, 11% shooting percentage on even strength shots, this year he was at 8.3%, you might even see the goal totals again jump up a little bit more. Not significantly, of course, but, you know,
yeah,
right now he's 24 goals. You know, his first year in Winnipeg, he was 28 goals. It's not unreasonable that he could, you know, be a 26, 27, 28 goal scorer next season as well.
Exactly, Drew. And what you're really looking for is red flags. Is there a red flag here? Is he scoring on a 10 more of the shots than you'd anticipate that he would?
Mm-hmm.
Different things like that. And when you look through for the red flags, as you don't really see many, you're going to have, obviously, your concerns that a guy getting older is, you know, maybe going to tail off eventually. Sure, and that's part of this deal, and I talk about that in terms of the contract numbers, which we'll talk about after the break. But the idea is you're looking for red flags with a guy, and you don't really see many.
No, there are no red flags, Richie. It's a player who is healthy for most of the time. He's played 98% of the games or whatever it is over the last 4 years for the Jets, and even going back to Atlanta and previous teams that he played for, Carolina, Chicago, he was a healthy player. You know, I think it's interesting, Rich, you used Jeff Carter and Zach Parise as comparables in the article, and you'd compare Andrew Ladd to those players, and you'd say, oh, there's no way mm-hmm. that he's as good as those players. But if you look at his numbers, they're very similar. And even though you'd say, okay, well, yeah, but Jeff Carter is more of a sniper, and Zach Parise, he's more of a playmaker, but he's also a shooter. And then you kind of compare their games, and they offer Not only positionally, and Jeff Carter's played center, but Parise plays the wing.
Right, left wing.
Left wing. You look at these players and you say, they still have the same impact on their teams. You take Andrew Ladd off of the Jets, who replaces what he does? Nobody. There is no guy on the Jets that can do everything he does when you throw in the leadership qualities and all of that. And if you're talking about what he would get on the open market or which teams would want him, I think 29 other teams would want Andrew Ladd.
Let's go to break. When we come back, I want to talk more about the comparables, as you just mentioned them, Jeff Carter and Zach Parise, and we'll talk about the actual dollar figures that you came up with at the end of the article. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're talking about the fair market value of Jets captain Andrew Ladd, and we're live on TSN 1290.
The winner in that 9-8 game last year, Wheeler, in for Ladd's goal! Andrew Ladd
We're talking about Andrew Ladd and the fair market value for his next contract here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Welcome back. This segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey. Conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. So before the break, we came. You mentioned the comparables that you came up with for Andrew Ladd. And of course, you don't just pluck these out of the air. You go back and you do some research. And the two names that came out, or the three names, pardon me, that came out to you the most, Richie, are Jeff Carter, Zach Parise, and Jason Spezza. Were you surprised that those were the names that Andrew Ladd compared with the best? Or did you think they were going to be names that maybe are a little less notable in the NHL?
I thought they'd probably be a little bit less notable, Drew. The one that struck me the most, I have to say, and as you alluded to this before the break, is Zach Parise. Left winger, first line left winger on your squad, kind of that emotional leader of your team.
Mm-hmm.
Their numbers are very similar. And they play the game a different way, but their production isn't very different at all. And Zach Parise, as everybody knows, cashed in big time with Minnesota a few years back. And that contract, you know, that extended past 8 years, is no longer available to National Hockey League squad. But that cap hit of $7.5 million, to me, has to be something that J.P. Barry is looking at very seriously.
J.P. Barry being Andrew Ladd's agent, of course.
So that's the one that catches me. That's the one that I say, oh, okay, I mean, let's work from that if I'm Andrew Ladd's camp. Now, Spezza is interesting in that the term is interesting to me. First of all, the production last year was very similar. Jason Spezza put up 62 points last year, and Andrew Ladd put up 62 points last year.
Yeah.
Right now, it's different points.
Yeah.
Sure, Spezza played a little bit with better players, you know, Sagan and Ben. I mean, top end, National Hockey League guys. Has a better career numbers, better passer, all that stuff. I don't think the agents really care. I mean, they're looking at the age. They're looking at the reliability. Jason Spezza's got a bad back. He's been injured before. He's missed large portions of seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And he just signed a 4-year deal with a fairly, $30 million.
$7.5 million a year on the salary cap.
So you see that number again.
No, Spezza also, worth pointing out, is a center.
And he's older than Ladd, though.
He's a little bit older than Ladd. He's more injury prone, and he's more of a playmaker than Andrew Ladd.
Right. I mean, he's been to the final as a number one center.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let's just put that in context. But into a final as a number one center, and he had a great playoffs that year with Ottawa. And that was a few years ago, though.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But he just signed this contract with UFA season on the horizon.
Yeah. Similarities between the two. And then the third player that came up with Jeff Carter.
And Jeff Carter, Drew, people are going to see, you know, this. I know in the article, the styles aren't the same. Jeff Carter's a rush player, beautiful shot, really good defensively, as you mentioned, can play wing and center, all that stuff. But his production has been pretty similar. Now, he's protected by Anze Kopitar, too.
Talk about what you mean by protected by Anze Kopitar.
Guys like Anze Kopitar, those guys are going to, the number one center is going to play against big-time competition on the other team. They're going to eat up a lot of tough minutes, and Andrew Ladd doesn't have that luxury. I mean, people thought, when Evander Kane, remember him, was here, that he would eventually hop over Ladd and take that responsibility, and Ladd could slot in to that second line left wing role. And I have to say, by the way, Andrew Ladd, to me, when he came into town, I thought he was, you know, a real solid second line left winger, and I think he pushed himself to be a first line left winger. I think the question, I want to get a little bit of a tangent, I think the question is, and I didn't include this in the article, but my question is this. I think he's proven himself to be that number one left winger. Can you win with Andrew Ladd being arguably your best forward?
I think you can, Richie. And I think what we're going to see over the next few years is our rookies getting a chance with the Jets. And ultimately, whether or not the Jets take the next step is going to be dependent on, does Mark Scheifele develop into a number one center, or at least a very solid number two center? Does Nikolaj Ehlers evolve into a top six winger?
Mm-hmm.
Does Jacob Trouba continue to develop? And there's no reason why all of these things can't happen, right? To me, that's, you know, to answer your question, I do think you can win with Andrew Ladd as your number one left winger, especially if you have a guy like Nikolaj Ehlers as your getting 60 points as your second line left winger, right? You have to have the supporting cast. You know, you mentioned, you know, Anje Kopitar and Jeff Carter. That's two Stanley Cups right there, right? That's your one and two centers. There's two Stanley Cups because they're big and they can each contribute offensively. They're responsible defensively, all that stuff. And like Richie's saying, there isn't a second Andrew Ladd on the Jets. They wanted Evander Kane to kind of be that 35 goal, 70 point first line left winger, and it never happened because he didn't develop as a player, and he's still kind of trying to prove himself as a number one left winger. That might happen in Buffalo. He's young. He's 24. That could happen, but I think, you know, really, when you look at Richie's article and what he points out and what he expects Andrew Ladd to get, because, you know, what Richie's saying is what he expects him to get based on what other players have gotten. And there's no reason why the Jets shouldn't sign him to a 5 or 6 year deal worth $6.5 million, $7 million a year because of the fact that he's done everything for this team. He really represents the identity of this team. He's relatively young in the sense that he the style that he plays and the fact that he hasn't missed a lot of hockey, he can play another 6 or 7 years easily. A guy like Dustin Byfuglien, you might not be able to say that about because he's not in as good of shape as Andrew Ladd is. But he is that impact player for this team. He is. And look at his 6 game-winning goals that he had last year or the 6 game-winning goals that he had in the first year. I mean, that's right up there with some of the best players in the NHL. The guy's got 2 Stanley Cups. He was a guy that was considered for the Olympic team, even though, you know, when you think of Jeff Carter and Zach Parise, you're thinking, yeah, they're a little bit of a step above Andrew Ladd. They're not that far above Andrew Ladd as far as what he can do. He has proven himself time and time again, and how many big goals have we seen this guy get for this team or whatever he has to do? So I think that, you know, the Jets, that's why you're going to see most likely the Jets and Andrew Ladd have a long-term agreement announced, because they know that you don't just pluck Andrew Ladd off of a tree, and they know what he's done for this team.
And they know with Michael Frolik experience that if you let him play into the season, you're going to be in trouble.
I agree with that.
How much of the loyalty factor do you think it comes into effect here? You addressed it in the article.
Why wouldn't there be a loyalty factor, right, Drew? Because he was the first guy to sign, right?
Sure.
The Thrashers came over from the Jets, and he's done exactly what's been asked of him. Mm-hmm. He's missed, like we said, 6 games in 4 years. He's been that first line left winger night in and night out. He goes out there, and he does his job. So as far as I'm concerned, you know, if you want to ask if there's a loyalty factor, I think absolutely. I think there should be, because I think that they look at him and they say, no, this is our captain. He's going to be the captain. A guy like Jacob Trouba, you know, or you know, you could say Blake Wheeler has that element of you could put the C on his chest. But right now, I think they look at it and they say, no, Andrew Ladd's our captain, and we want to stick with him.
From a dollars and cents point of view, then, we've broken down, we've got the comparables. Parise makes $7.5 million a season on a term that's no longer possible. Spezza makes $7.5 million a season on a 4-year deal that he just signed, with a lot of, you know, comparables between him and the situation that Ladd's in. Jeff Carter makes much less, $5.27 million on an old 11-year contract that he signed back in the day with Philadelphia.
Paul Holmgren special.
Yeah, Paul Holmgren special, no longer possible. You know, you came up with a sliding scale when it came to the dollars and cents that the Jets should pay Andrew Ladd, or that you think that is fair market value for Andrew Ladd. And the longer the deal, the less per season the salary cap hit. You started off at a 4-year term at $7 million per year, going all the way to a 7-year term at $6.25 million per season. You think that's somewhere, you think that that's really the range where they're going to be coming in at?
I do. I think they'll likely land on a 5 or 6 year deal.
And you said 5 years at $6.75 million?
I think the probably most likely, I would guess, would be 6 years and 39.
6 years and 39, which is $6.5 million per season. Do you think that this past July 1st has changed the market at all in terms of signing contract extensions?
Well, I
the players that went to UFA didn't get paid.
It's a good question.
It is a good question.
But the players that went to UFA this year were not the quality of the guys we're talking about who are eligible for next year.
Right. Next year is
way better.
Way better, the free agency pool.
So, I mean, the GM's got smart.
Yeah, you got that Stamkos contract coming up.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the GM's got smart about paying the wrong guys, but I don't think this is the wrong guy.
So you're fine. And
I think if anything, just quickly, Drew, I think because the salary cap didn't go up as much, I think what you're seeing now is the Cody Francons and the Johnny Oduyas and the Curtis Glencrosses, those guys are sticking around because teams also have their RFAs to sign. And so they're not signing that kind of second-tier free agents. So I think, if anything, that's what's changed at the salary cap. I think a couple of years ago, they maybe thought the salary cap, Rich, was going to be, what, $75, $76 million?
Sure.
And it's $71
million. Yeah.
So there's an extra $4 or $5 million you could sign a third-line forward, for example.
To wrap it all up in conclusion, Richard's final figures, a four-year, and this is a range, a four-year $28 million deal with a salary cap hit of $7 million a season, or a seven-year $43.75 million deal with the salary cap hit of $6.25 million per season. Somewhere in that range is what the fair market value, according to Richard Pollock, is.
Wouldn't be surprised if Richie's very close, because these previous articles that he's done over the years, he's been very close. So.
Very close. There is some truth to what he says. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll head out to St. Louis, talk about Vladimir Tarasenko. That's a guy who signed a big eight-year, $60 million contract. We'll be joined by Jeremy Rutherford of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290. You're listening to TSN 1290. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and this segment is brought to you by Frank Zappia and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtor of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com or at 204-772-2100.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to be joined on the show now by our good friend from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. He covers the St. Louis Blues, Jeremy Rutherford. Jeremy, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning. How you doing, gang? Looks like the Central Division got a little tougher yesterday.
Yeah, it's amazing. This division, it was the hardest division in hockey last year, and that's certainly going to be the case this coming season as well, as each team just keeps on reloading and adding more and more pieces. Obviously, Jeremy, brought you on to talk about the Blues offseason thus far. It's certainly been a busy one. We'll start with the news from this week. They get RFA, Vladimir Tarasenko, under contract for the next 8 years, $60 million contract, $7.5 million per season. Are you surprised? There was a lot of chatter about how, this deal means the death of the bridge contract and, everything else. Are you surprised that GM Doug Armstrong went for the full eight-year contract as opposed to going into a bridge deal sort of strategy?
Well, here's the way I look at it, guys. First of all, I don't think the bridge deal is dead. I think a lot of players in the future will, have to cross that bridge, if you will. But I think that it's a situation...
Well done, Jeremy. Well done.
I think it's a situation where the Blues know they have a special player. And so Doug Armstrong has been the king of the bridge deals. Every young player, promising player coming up has signed a 1-2, sometimes a 3-year deal. But the case with Vladimir Tarasenko, you're talking 37 goals, 73 points last year, top 10 in both categories, and they haven't had a player like him in a long time. So they get to the negotiating table with Mike Liut, the agent. The camp throws out the number, the average annual value of $7.5 million, and Doug Armstrong says, fine, we're comfortable with that. We believe in Vladdy Tarasenko, but we need some term on that contract. So we're not talking 5 years, we're talking 8 years. And Tarasenko signs the deal. I think it's a good deal for Vladdy. He's going to make $7.5 million, but I think it's a tremendous deal for the St. Louis Blues to have him wrapped up for 8 years. I was looking at the Steven Stamkos contract, and you guys are certainly familiar with it. He signed a 5-year deal, AAV $7.5 million. He's going into the final year of that contract. Now, as we all know, he's looking at $9, $10 million. So for the Blues not to have to worry about that after 5 years, I just think it is a tremendous deal for them.
Jeremy, you mentioned, the 37 goals Vladimir Tarasenko had last year and 73 points. And he really had, not only did he have a career year in, as far as the numbers go, but he had a career year in the sense that he's really established himself as a star in the NHL. And when you look at the contract, 8 years, $60 million, and everyone's seen the highlight reel goals that Tarasenko has scored, and he scored a lot of them. Is this not only a contract that reflects his skill level, but they look at Tarasenko as a guy that they're going to build this team around? Because they've obviously built this team around players like David Backes and TJ Oshie, who was obviously traded. We'll get into that a little bit later. But do they look at Tarasenko as a guy that really that is going to be part of this team? Well, obviously he'll be part of this team for 8 years, but he can be that guy that kind of leads them past the second round of the playoffs and, you know, into a Stanley Cup eventually?
Yeah, I think so. But as we all well know, in the NHL, you can't build around just one guy. It's got to be what everybody's calling a core group. And the Blues have been vocal about this. They believe they have two cores, and one, the older core, two, the younger core. The older core is Alexander Steen, David Backes. It was TJ Oshie. You could throw Barrett Jackman in that mix, Patrick Berglund. The younger core is the core that they're obviously building around. And they signed Alex Pietrangelo 2 years ago to that 7-year deal. And then now they get Tarasenko done. They feel like they have their foundation forward set at $7.5 million for the next 8 years. They feel like they have their franchise foundation-building defenseman in Alex Pietrangelo set for the foreseeable future. And now they're working on some other players. They signed Jori Lehterä. That was a bit under the radar to a 3-year extension. And now they're going after Jaden Schwartz. Kevin Shattenkirk still has a couple years left on his trade. So that's the group that they're kind of building around. And they're not pushing the Steens and the Backeses out the door, even though that's what they did do with TJ Oshie. But they're really focusing their efforts on this younger group. Doug Armstrong said he wants to get all these guys that I just mentioned under contract for the prime of their career, and they've been able to do that so far with a few of them.
You know, I think, as you mentioned, Jeremy, is a good deal for the Blues to get Tarasenko locked. And you mentioned Lehterä, the 3-year extension he signs. Did the amount of money he's going to make per year surprise you at all?
A little bit for this reason. He's only played 1 year in the league, so he's going to go from, what was he making, 2.5 or 2.7. Now he's going to go up over 4, closer to 4.5. So yeah, he got a pretty good bump. Doug Armstrong joked the other day. He said, boy, has this guy played the system perfectly. He stays in Europe till he's 27 years old. He comes over, he plays 1 year, all of a sudden he's a free agent, and now he's due another contract. So, but he was a good player. You know, he wasn't used to the 82-game schedule. He wasn't used to the back-to-backs, but out of the gate last year, he was tremendous with Tarasenko, and I think they'll go into training camp with those two playing together. So we'll see. I think he can play in this league. I think that it was wise for the Blues to get him wrapped up for a few years, and especially with the chemistry he had with Tarasenko.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Our guest is Jeremy Rutherford of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, discussing the St. Louis Blues and their offseason thus far. Jeremy, another move that the Blues made, a significant one. They traded away TJ Oshie to the Washington Capitals. They get Troy Brouwer. They get goalie prospect Phoenix Copley. They get a third-round pick. You know, what was the incentive for that trade? Why did the Blues want, you know, why did they want to get rid of TJ Oshie? Or maybe that's a little too blunt. Why did Troy Brouwer's acquisition appeal to the St. Louis Blues?
Well, I think it was two or three prong. After three first round exits in the playoffs, they had to mix things up. And when you start doing the process of elimination, you don't want to trade Alexander Steen. David Backes is your captain. You know, you got Lehterä, Tarasenko, Schwartz. You're not moving those guys. Somebody, a name guy from that core group, had to go. And I think, you know, the Blues did their homework. They checked around the league. There was a little bit of interest in Oshie, and obviously those were the rumors here in St. Louis for months that he would be the guy to go. And then it materialized. So, number one, they needed to mix things up. Two, Doug Armstrong said the other day he feels like they have a few players like TJ Oshie. They don't have enough like Troy Brouwer. Ken Hitchcock really likes this acquisition. You know, say what you want to say about Troy Brouwer. He's not the fastest guy, and this is a league that's really, really moving towards speed. We saw that in the Stanley Cup Finals. But Troy Brouwer is a north-south player. He gets dirty, and that's part of his game. He's an honest player. So I think that's what intrigued the Blues about this move. And then the third prong here is that the Blues are up against the cap. Now that they've got everybody in the fold, and remember, this was before the Tarasenko signing when this deal went down, they're real close. And getting everything done, they're within $1 million of the cap. and it doesn't sound like much, but the Oshie for Brouwer deal saved him close to $500,000. So I think you have to throw that in the mix, too, as to why the deal was done. And I guess I'll add one more quick one. The Blues needed another goaltender in the system to play in the American Hockey League this year alongside Jordan Binnington, and they feel like they got a good prospect in Copley.
Jeremy, how close were the Blues to trading Kevin Shattenkirk? Because I remember down at the draft in Florida, you know, it was almost expected that there was a good possibility he was going to be moved. And you mentioned the Blues are right up against the salary cap. I thought it was pretty ridiculous considering he had 44 points in 56 games. He's one of the best power play defensemen in the NHL. How close were the Blues to moving him?
I think closer than people realize. You know, were they shopping him? I don't know that they were out there shopping him with the idea that they had to move him. I just think that they were gauging what they could get in return. And this isn't a move where, you know, they're looking at next season and saying, how can we get better? You don't get better by trading Kevin Shattenkirk. That certainly isn't the case. The motive for checking around the league and seeing what they could get for Kevin Shattenkirk was this. They already have Alex Petrangelo, as I mentioned, 6.5 a year. They signed Jay Bouwmeester, and at the time it seemed like a pretty decent deal a couple years ago, 5 years, $5.4 million a year. You guys know it. He's not flashy, but he is steady, eats up minutes, and he never gets hurt. So, you know, you needed a guy to play with Alex Petrangelo. That's why they signed him. Well, now you're talking about Kevin Shattenkirk emerging into one of the top young defensemen, and he's got 2 years left on his deal, and when that deal's up, he's going to command a lot of money. And can you have, you know, you're talking $17 million in three defensemen possibly after that two-year term expires. So I think what the Blues were doing there was looking ahead, saying, hey, his value is tremendous right now. Let's see what we can get in return, and we won't have to face that challenge in a couple of years getting everybody under the cap. I think Blues fans are happy nothing got done. They love Kevin Shattenkirk. Any team in the league would like to have this guy on the roster, but I do know for sure that the Blues checked into it, but nothing came of it.
You know, Jeremy, final question here. You look at the moves that the Blues have made over the offseason, and as a whole, the team looks pretty similar to the squad that you had at the end of the previous season. And, you know, you add in Brouwer, and you mentioned he's not a great skater. Oshie's not a great skater either. And they're both not afraid to, you know, be physical. And they both, right shooting forwards. Like, if you look at the roster, it looks pretty darn similar. And the goaltending is still an issue. Why would Blues fans expect something different this year than what's happened the past few years?
Yeah, I'll say this. It's a good question. First of all, Blues fans don't think that this team is much different than last year's team, and many are skeptical of the lack of turnover that happened this offseason. And so I don't want to stick up for Doug Armstrong when I say this because I understand where fans are coming from, but here's the situation. Paul Stastny, because of the emergence of Laterra last year and his chemistry with Tarasenko, was relegated to third-line duty. Mm-hmm. They're going to try to move him up a little bit. That's a $7 million. I know he was overpriced in free agency, but that's a $7 million player who's going to get a bigger role. David Backes is going to see some time at the right wing. I think that's where he's better suited than center. They got a first-round pick, Robbie Fabry, from last year, who's going to come into camp. He looked tremendous last year before being injured. He might be in the mix. Dmitry Yashkin scored 100 points in the Quebec League a few years ago. He's been a third liner for the Blues. He's going to get more ice time. You look at the third pairing, Barrett Jackman. He's been a trooper for the Blues all these years, but he was getting up there. Now they're going to go with Petteri Lindbom and Robert Bortuzzo, who I don't know if you've seen a lot of these guys, but they bring the team a different element. They're physical, and they're going to be able to get the puck up ice quicker than Barrett Jackman did. So a lot of these other things are flying under the radar. Everybody's just looking at the Oshie for Brouwer. There are some other moves. Whether they get this team over the hump, I don't know. But if you look at it, there are a few more changes with this Blues team moving forward than just that trade.
Jeremy Rutherford covers the St. Louis Blues for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Jeremy, great insight as always, and we appreciate your time on this Saturday morning.
No problem, guys. Talk to you later.
And Jeremy, have a good summer, but we'll see you Sunday, October 18th.
All right, you too.
Thanks, Jeremy. Take care. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. That's Big thanks to Jeremy Rutherford for joining us talking about the St. Louis Blues. This segment of the program brought to you by Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, a proper fitting custom-made mouth guard is a must-have piece of protective equipment. Don't be an Ezzy. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center, 204-487-2226, or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. As Jeremy alluded at the start of the last segment, at the start of the interview, the Central Division just keeps getting more and more interesting, and that continued last night on a quiet Friday evening when the Chicago Blackhawks, I can say finally, traded Patrick Sharp along with defensive prospect Steven Johns to the Dallas Stars in exchange for veteran defenseman or defenseman Trevor Daly and Winnipeg, born in Winnipeg, Ryan Garbutt, Winnipeg forward Ryan Garbutt. So a in-division trade between the Blackhawks and the Stars sees Patrick Sharp get off of the salary cap books of the Chicago Blackhawks. How surprised are you that Sharp was traded in division?
Very surprised. And I think Richie probably agrees with that. You rarely see trades in division, as you're kind of alluding to, Drew.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't see trades of this magnitude, Richie. And, you know, you heard the Washington Capitals were after Patrick Sharp. Well, when they signed Justin Williams and traded for TJ Oshie, the writing was on the wall. Patrick Sharp wasn't going to Washington. I thought Patrick Sharp might even be a candidate to go to the Devils, who are actually a team that haven't made too many big free agent signings. You know, they traded for Kyle Palmieri, but they're a team that's going to be kind of at the lower end of the salary cap. They're at the bottom as far as the teams go. So I thought maybe they'd eat up some of that salary and get a guy like Patrick Sharp. He could lead the younger players. But I like this trade for both teams. I really do. And you look at the Chicago Blackhawks, and they wanted to keep Brandon Saad rich. And you hear that, you know, they offered him 5 years and $25 million, and he wanted more. And he got that from Columbus, and they got, obviously, Anisimov. In return, there were some other players involved. Mm-hmm. But when you talk about the big players here, and Ryan Garbutt will be a good depth forward. I mean, Ryan Garbutt's a guy that was playing with Cody Eakin on the third line of the Stars. He'll be a third line, fourth line guy, can hopefully chip in 10 goals. He'll finish his checks, can drop the gloves if he wants to. And he had some discipline issues this year. But like Ryan Garbutt, as you said, a good former Winnipeg South Blue. But the key players are Patrick Sharp, obviously, and Trevor Daly, Rich. And Trevor Daly addresses their need for another defenseman. They were playing four defensemen. They won the Stanley Cup with four defensemen, essentially. You know, Trevor Van Riemsdyk and David Rundblad and these guys were playing very low minutes, and you could throw in Kimmo Timonen in there, Drew. Mm-hmm. But if they don't re-sign Johnny Oduya, by the way, I think there's still a chance they sign Johnny Oduya. If you read, you know, Scott Powers of ESPN or Tracy Myers, they kind of say that they haven't ruled that out. Now with Trevor Daly, though, Rich.
What about this? Let me quickly get in there. What about Dallas signing Johnny Oduya?
Well, that's been a team that has been rumored, and it would be funny if
they definitely need defensemen. Signed him.
I wouldn't be surprised if that was kind of part of this trade, mm-hmm. right? Because Johnny Oduya is not going to command that kind of number one defenseman money, but you'd have to think he's probably going to want, what, $4 to $5 million a year? He's a good defenseman. If you're his agent, Rich, you're saying, look, Johnny Oduya was just playing in the top four of a Stanley Cup winning team. So I wouldn't be surprised about that, but this offers them the insurance. And I think, you know, you throw in a guy like Garbutt. I know they've tried to move a guy like Brian Bickell, so he's kind of fits into that Chicago, you know, you have your top six kind of established there, and so he can give you a bottom kind of third line role. But Trevor Daly's a good defenseman, Rich, and he's mm-hmm. you know, in his mid-30s now.
31.
He's a little bit younger. Sorry, I thought he was a little bit older than that. But he's been on Dallas his entire career, and he's an excellent puck-moving defenseman, and he essentially was their number one defenseman. I mean, a guy like Goligoski never really developed, Rich. But for the Chicago Blackhawks, now they have another guy that can play minutes that possibly they lose with Johnny Oduya.
You know, Ezzy, I agree with a lot of what you said. Daly there, he plays 23 minutes a night, plays power play, penalty kill, even strength. Not a big guy. You know, 5'11".
Physical, though.
Yeah, he's not afraid to get in dirty areas. He's not the most physical guy, Ezzy, but he's not afraid to engage. He's a great skater. I mean, that's a test. That's the key to his game.
Moves. Very similar player to Oduya, actually.
A little bit, yeah. You know, he moves the puck real well, skates real well. Can chip in offensively. Obviously, had a lot of goals this year, but overall, you know, get you 30 points. He's going to fit in real nice on the second pairing in Chicago, under contract. That's the key there. He's under contract, obviously. When you look at it from bringing in Garbutt, also we quickly talk about Garbutt, as he mentioned all the key points there. you know, he's a guy who's, you know, got to where he is. And just to point out, Daly's at a reasonable 3.3 hit to cap it for the next two seasons.
Dallas retained salary on Ryan Garbutt. They retained half of his $1.8 million salary.
Yeah, so you have a $900,000 for Garbutt. He's 29 years old for the next two seasons. Garbutt's going to be a physical guy. He's going to bring a different dynamic. As you mentioned, discipline issues, and I think Dallas grew tired of his lack of discipline. I mean, he just wasn't staying, you know, on the ice.
Slew-footing incident against the Jets last year, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, a couple incidents, Drew, and the issue is, you know, you have Antoine Roussel. He's a little bit of a quality of player that you already have and you can afford to give up. And, I mean, again, Jim Nill is going to know that the talent is the key here. So what you look at is Patrick Sharp. He can play both wing spots, got a great shot. I think hasn't been as dynamic the past two seasons. But what you're going to do is throw him on the wing with either Jason Spezza, who we spoke about earlier in the show, or Tyler Seguin. And you're going to put him with such talented players. I mean, frankly, at center, John Taves is arguably a top 2-3 player in the league, but he doesn't pass the puck to the level of a guy even like Spezza. Like, it's because these guys are like dynamic passers, right? So Sharp should see a lot of opportunities, especially on the power play, to score goals.
Sure.
And I think that Dallas is under the cap. I think they're going to bring in, sign a defenseman still. And you look at their top six now. Remember last year, Valerie Nichushkin, who's a very talented player, was injured for most of the season with a hip injury. So now you have Seguin and Ben, who also has an injury, although he's apparently ahead of in his recovery. Nichushkin, Sharp, Spezza. I mean, you're talking dynamic players there. Mm-hmm. Now, you're older, but you can be older with Spezza and Sharp because you're younger with Ben, Seguin, and Nichushkin. So I like this move for both teams. But I don't like it for Dallas unless they bring in a left defenseman to replace Daly. Because if they don't, then they've just gotten stronger at a strength and weaker at a weakness.
Right. They have $7 million in cap space, Dallas does right now.
Yeah.
And, you know, the truth is the free agent market for defensemen, there are top six, top four defensemen still available on the market. And they'd probably be able to get them at a bit of a value at this point in time because the market has been so depreciated and so depressed. As we saw on July 1st, you know, they could be they're in the market for a guy like Cody Franzen who's still available out there.
You actually want, to be honest with you, you want two defensemen there.
Yeah, you might want. So maybe you bring in Cody Franzen and then you bring in Johnny Oduya.
Cody Franzen is a good, you know, it's a guy that I thought about for the Dallas Stars. Richie mentioned Oduya, both left shot guys.
Mm-hmm.
They're both offensive.
Franzen's ready.
Oh, sorry. I thought Oduya's he was a lefty. Oduya's for sure lefty.
Yeah. Yeah.
I thought Franzen was a lefty. That's why Richie's here, to make me look good.
Mm-hmm. Or bad,
but
as the case may be.
They need a left-shot defenseman. And
they do.
Whether it's Oduya or Franzen, and they need somebody to come in there and play in their top four. Klingberg was a revelation this year. Mm-hmm. Brother of Carl Klingberg. He got his contract. I believe it was it 5 years?
It was longer than that.
Six years?
It was,
four to five.
It was 7 years.
Klingberg's a good
player.
7 years,
$29.75 million for John Klingberg.
You got Klingberg, you got Goligoski. They brought in Jason Demers last year, traded for Brendan Dillon. Mm-hmm. You've got a decent top six. Rich is right. This team wants to win now, and you know you've brought in Niemi to back up Lettinen.
Well, you can talk about that too right now if you want.
You need two defensemen.
You need an established top four pairing defenseman. Mm-hmm. Absolutely, top two pairing defenseman. I guess
you need
top four
two.
Defenseman.
You need probably two.
Because if you don't, Rich, as we know, last year that was their Achilles heel. They didn't get the goaltending. Kari Lehtinen didn't have his best year, but they'll bounce back. Kari Lehtinen's an excellent goaltender, and if you bring in a defenseman, then all of a sudden you're essentially, you might be even better than the St. Louis Blues in that division.
Yeah, and your key for value is the fact that you're paying Seguin and Ben a combined $11 million. That's sure. What your value is.
Yeah, and those are two. You know, those are two top 10 players in the league,
yeah.
Give or take.
They're close to that. But you can't, if you're going to play Klingberg at number one right side, and you're going to play Demers at number two right side. I think he's probably better off at number three right side. And Goligoski is probably better off number two left side at the most. You mentioned Franzen and Oduya. I mean, both those guys might make sense. The problem you get into is obviously what they want and how long they want. The other factor is this. You don't want to lock in too much money because Jamie Benn's coming up for contract in 2 years, right? What are you doing over there? You playing some Bob Marley?
I believe that was a commercial for a local car car repair place.
These pop-up ads.
You know, put computer on mute.
Well, I did now. Sorry.
All things considered, that what Ezzy just played on his computer, it could have been a lot
this
worse.
This is true.
It could have been a lot worse.
What, it could have been Wu-Tang Clan? I don't understand.
I'll explain it to you in commercial break, let me tell you. It could have been a lot worse at that point in time. Anyways, Dallas is going to be an interesting team to see what they do to fix the defense. But they certainly, Patrick Sharp, good value they get for him. It'll be interesting to see. Central Division just keeps on getting better and tougher and more competitive. It'll be a great season in the Central Division. Let's head to break. When we come back, George Johnson from the Calgary Herald will join us to talk about the Flames and the moves that they've made. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290. One hour down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, Tom Rhodes. Check him out, rumorscomedyclub.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program from the Calgary Herald. He covers the Calgary Flames, George Johnson. George, good morning. How are you?
Oh, I'm surviving. How about you guys?
We're doing well. How's the Stampede going this year?
I don't go.
I can't blame you.
It's funny. When I got here 34 years ago to cover Badger Bob and all those guys, I told these guys here, I'm not getting in a pair of cowboy boots. I don't care what you guys do. I'm from Winnipeg. We don't wear cowboy boots. It's just not the way it works. And everybody said to me, give it time. Well, here we are, 2015, and I still have never put on a pair of cowboy boots. They may plant me in them, but they ain't going to get me in them. So.
It's funny, George, because Drew's actually wearing apple-bottom jeans with boots with the fur.
That's a good fashion statement. We used to do that back in we used to do back in Westwood in the late 60s.
George, we brought you on obviously to talk about the high-flying, free-spending Calgary Flames.
Sounds weird, doesn't it?
It does. You know, I think we're, you know, the next lockout when it happens, because inevitably will have to be the Calgary Flames. They're going to be the ones responsible for the way they bully the NHL and with all their salary, their freewheeling ways.
Yeah. Well, it's certainly been different than, you know, I mean, it was obviously refreshing to see here, especially after the season they had last year, because as we all know, they only made the playoffs by 2 points, despite all this magic carpet ride that they had. And teams like that, a lot of times, you look at Colorado last year, take steps back just because there's a correction period. And they went out and they got Frolik, and they went out and they got Dougie Hamilton, and they got Rammel re-signed because they couldn't go and find another goalie. And, you know, they're basically showing that, you know, they're not happy just treading water now and sort of being back in the mix, which at least publicly and PR-wise is really good to see.
Let's start with the Dougie Hamilton acquisition. They obviously acquire him from Boston for not a huge price, well, all things considered, when you're talking about a 22-year-old stud defenseman. Then they sign him to the contract, $5.75 million per season. You know, does Dougie Hamilton's acquisition make the Calgary Flames defense the best in the NHL?
Oh, I don't know about that. They got more mileage out of Dennis Wiedemann in the playoffs last year. I mean, he was gallant and far beyond anything we thought we were going to see. But, you know, you put Hamilton in a mix with Giordano and Chris Russell, who's one tough little hombre and is actually a cowboy and wears cowboy boots, and TJ Brody. And, you know, it's a pretty solid group. And as you said, with Hamilton, you know, we don't know how good he's going to be, but he's 22 years old. He's a top four defenseman at 22 in an original six city that's had some success, and that sure beats a first and 2 second-round picks.
George, the next player on the docket is a little bit of a sore spot for Winnipeg Jets fans.
Ooh, I bet.
Michael Frolik signs the 5-year deal with the Calgary Flames, and we thought there was a small chance that he'd sign, but we kind of all agreed that the writing was on the wall when he signed the 1-year deal. But what did you think of that contract and kind of how Michael Frolik fits in with this young group of forwards?
Well, I obviously think it's a good fit, and as you guys mentioned, they seem to be chucking around money like confetti at the U.S. Women's National Team parade in New York, you know what I mean, right now. He gives him some size, you know, he gives him another top six forward. From that standpoint, you know, that they really like the acquisition. And as I said, the thing about them now is they don't seem to be getting older. They seem to be getting, they seem to be getting younger, if anything. And the thing about it in terms of Hamilton, but the thing about it that's good from their standpoint is for a long time, as we saw Canadian teams kind of slip away, this was a graveyard. No one wanted to come here. You know, I mean, Calgary, forget it. I mean, the last time anybody wanted to come here was Cliff Fletcher when he was getting Joey Mullen and those people out of St. Louis. And now, all of a sudden, Calgary, because of their young team, because of Hartley, because of Treliving, because of the whole culture that they're trying to establish here, is suddenly an attractive place to go again, which is quite different and, is, again, quite refreshing.
You know, one of the signings, George, that kind of went under the radar, at least outside of Calgary, was Michael Backlund's contract extension, yep, signing for 3.5 on a 3-year deal. Has he kind of evolved into a player? You know, some expected him to be a top six center, and really now it seems like he's going to slot into that third line center role. Yep. Has he come into his own a bit?
Well, he has. He's one of those guys that people hear, you know, there's no sitting on the fence about Michael Backlund. Yeah, they should keep him. No, they shouldn't keep him. He's one of those type of guys. But I think during that playoff run and during, the run into it, I mean, he showed himself to be a pretty good third-line center. And when you look at the fact that you've got Monahan, you look at the fact that you got Bennett coming up, and hopefully they're going to get him back at center, Sam Bennett, because that's where he plays and that's where he wants to play, you're filling spots. And Michael Backlund has been, you know, a pretty good warrior for this team over the years since he's been here. He's the longest-serving guy, outside of Giordano. And, I think that they looked at him, they saw a spot for him, and it all made sense to them.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is George Johnson of the Calgary Herald, discussing the Flames' offseason thus far. And George, you mentioned it sort of at the start of the interview. They re-signed Kari Ramo as well. Mm-hmm. That gives the Flames three goaltenders on one-way deals. Ramo, Jonas Hiller, of course, and then the sort of the younger of the three players, the prospect, Joni Ordio, is on a one-way deal. How is that going to shape itself out as they enter into training camp, given that somebody's going to have to be unless they carry three goalies, somebody's either going to have to be traded or sent down through waivers?
Well, you would think that, Brad Treliving came out last year when we asked him the question, at some juncture, and he basically said, I don't like it. I don't like three goaltenders. I don't like this constant guessing game that goes on around this kind of a situation. So they've got Ramo signed. Hiller's here. Ordio is a guy that has actually Sean in the times that they brought him up, so it wouldn't surprise me if they offloaded one before the start of camp, because if there's one thing Brad Treliving doesn't like, it's kind of the mess just kind of hanging around, and I think that along with the Giordano contract are two of the things that they really want to address, I think, before the beginning of camp, because as Brad said, 3-2 just doesn't go.
George, you mentioned earlier in the interview that, you know, this past season for the Calgary Flames was kind of a bit of a magic carpet ride because the expectations were so low. How cognizant are the Flames management and coaching staff of not getting too high based on last year's season and not having that kind of fallback year, like, for example, the Colorado Avalanche had a good young team that won the division?
Yeah.
Are they really trying to keep this team humble and knowing that they still have to kind of have that hard work mentality and not just think that they're going to be given a playoff spot next year?
Well, they say they addressed it with each and every guy at the exit meetings. It's easy to say that we addressed it, and it's easy to address it. It's another thing for these guys to come in and sort of take that to heart, in the sense that, you know, I mean, they won an awful lot of third-period hockey games last year. Twice they came back from two goals down in the last 2 minutes. I mean, they had a fantastic overtime shootout record. Nothing seemed to be beyond them. They came back from four goals down to get a point in Ottawa in the third period. late in the season. I mean, all this kind of stuff happened. Giordano went out and they didn't miss a beat when we all thought that they'd fall into a cavern and we'd never see them again. So all this stuff, it all worked last year. I guess that's the easiest way to say it. It all worked. It doesn't mean it's going to work this year, but I think that by going and adding Frolik, getting Ramos signed, adding Hamilton, they've shown that, as I said, they're not willing to sort of just stand still and have everybody in town admire them. They're actually trying to get better because they know it's going to be tougher next year.
You know, George, you look at the cap situation at the reality of any team in the National Hockey League. Now, it's funny that Michael Frolik's actually the highest paid forward on the team.
Well, it was funny that Dennis Wyden was the highest paid defenseman, too. But so weird stuff happens, right?
It does. And we looked at their back end. They have a lot of money tied up in the back end. And you look to a guy like Ladislav Smith, $3.5 million for the next two seasons. Obviously, he had the neck injury last year.
Yeah.
Is that a contract they'd possibly maybe move with a later pick to try and get off the books?
Well, it's that or it's there's going to have to be something done with that, especially you talk about the money situation. After next year, they have Sean Monahan and Johnny Gaudreau coming up. And that's something that True Living has mentioned on more than one occasion here, is we can't just spend money for today because we have these two guys that we think are going to be the cornerstone of our franchise going forward up front, and we have them at the same time. And this is going to cost us an awful lot of money. So I think that, you know, from what we've seen of Brad, he did a great job last year not biting on older defensemen, older overpriced defensemen at the trade deadline after Giordano had been hurt and everybody was pleading with him to go get somebody to finally make the playoffs after 5 years in the wilderness. He didn't do it, stuck to his guns. They still made the playoffs, and he winds up getting a 22-year-old defenseman in the summer. And so I think that people here trust Brad for living to do that, to make sure that, you know, the future is going to be taken care of and not just next year.
George, we'll let you go on this last question. The arbitration period is opening up in about 9 days. The Flames have three players who are RFAs and are arbitration eligible: Lance Boma, Paul Byron, Josh Juris. Yeah. You expect that they're going to actually reach the actual case time where they're going to be argued about, or you think those three get done ahead of the due date?
Well, you would think Boma would get done. They absolutely love Lance Boma. I mean, he blocks shots. He's one of those, you know, Michael Backlund type guys. It doesn't have to be on your top six and will work his tail off. I mean, Bob Hartley talks about him like he, you know, adopted him and brought him up as an orphan or something. So you would think that he'd get done. I'm not too sure about the other two guys. I know Trey Levine was off the record a little prickly about the whole process. He was kind of wondering why this all was happening. So I think we just have to wait and see a playoff. But I would be really surprised if Boma didn't get done, because I think that they believe he is a part going forward for them, a big part.
16 goals for Boma last year.
Yeah, and he's more than that. I mean, he brings kind of more than that. I mean, he's just that terrier guy you got to have. And they're not the biggest team in the world, so if you're going to be small, you better have some small guys that compete and hard and in the tough areas, and to use a whole bunch of cliches, and he's one of those guys.
Lance is an Alberta boy. Does he wear the cowboy boots, though, George?
You know what? I would think less of him if he did, but I can't judge anybody on that. I'm only going on what my Westwood, St. James, Winnipeg upbringing standards tell me.
George Johnson covers the Calgary Flames for the Calgary Herald. George, appreciate your time this morning, and we'll let you get back to the chuck wagon races.
Oh, stop it. Thanks very much, guys.
Thanks, George. Take care. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. When we come back, we'll talk about some signings the Detroit Red Wings have made.
Trying to get away from Cowan. It's all Nyquist on this ship. Keep on going. Nyquist has it. Nyquist shooting. Scores!
Oh,
game winner with a ship. Gus Nyquist, 3-2 Detroit. They win it in Ottawa.
That, a clip of Detroit Red Wings forward Gustav Nyquist scoring in overtime to beat the Ottawa Senators from earlier this year. Gustav Nyquist, newly under contract with the Detroit Red Wings, we'll talk about it this segment, which is brought to you by Royal Sports. Since 1974, Royal Sports has been the city's number one hockey shop, plus so much more like soccer, baseball, bikes, skateboards, as well as having the city's largest selection of athletic and casual footwear. For locations, hours, and more, check them out online at royalsports.me. And of course, today at Royal Sports in their parking lot from noon to 4, Five Hole for Food, the street hockey tournament, raising money for the silo mission. So go check it out if you're looking for something to do on this Saturday afternoon at the Royal Sports location on Pembina. A great cause, of course, and raises money for the silo mission and everything else. And, you know, Five Hole for Food this afternoon at Royal Sports.
Yeah, absolutely. Go check that out. I know Dave Manouk went last year, didn't have a chance to go. I mean, you know what? Maybe we'll go after the show and check it out, and you should definitely go check it out. As you mentioned, Drew, great cause. Play a little hockey.
Mm-hmm.
What's better than that? It's a beautiful day.
Yeah, absolutely. Detroit Red Wings, as I mentioned, Gustav Nyquist, he's an RFA, and he was they were heading to a potential arbitration hearing. Instead, they get him signed to a deal, a four-year, $19 million contract, cap hit of $4.75 million per season. He's coming off of a 27-goal, 27-assist for 54 points in 82 games last year for the Red Wings. Good value for the Detroit Red Wings here in your mind?
Yeah. I mean,
ask a question when you know the answer. That's the case with that one.
That is such a Detroit Red Wings contract. Yeah. Like 4 years, and you get him at a relatively reasonable cap hit. You don't overpay.
Yeah, like, what was the agent?
It's a Kenny Holland special.
I mean, maybe, you know, I don't know. That's a ridiculous value to me. I realize there's some RFA years in there, both two RFA years, two UFA years.
That's correct.
Even so, 4.75, like if he gets this contract at a cap hit of 5.5, I'm still thinking that's pretty fair. Maybe 5.75 even. I mean, you have to look at what Gustav Nyquist brings to the table, guys, and he's a tremendously skilled guy. You know, he's not your biggest guy. Great hands, sees the ice really well. Compliments really, you know, really good players. They've developed him and brought him along slowly like they do all their guys. But he put up 28 goals in 13-14, 27 goals in less games actually. So a little drop off there in and you say his shooting percentage goes down in 82 games last year. But I think people forget nobody scores 25 goals anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So the guy just popped two 25 plus goal seasons, and essentially in his two first full seasons in the National Hockey League. He's only going to get better. Yeah. He's getting more confident. I think this is absolutely great value. I think he's a tremendously skilled player, and maybe they're disappointed with this playoffs, and you would have liked him to be a little more impactful against Tampa Bay. But overall, I think this is great value.
It's great value, Drew, and you know we're going to get into the other UFA signings.
Sure. 2 points in seven playoff games, which you just mentioned.
Half of his goals were on the power play. You watch the Detroit Red Wings power play, he was the guy. I mean, there's other good players, obviously. They still have Zetterberg and Datsyuk. Mm-hmm. And then you're going to throw in a Mike Green to this team. And mm-hmm. I like the Green and Richard signings, Drew. I got to say, I mean, those are two guys that are going to be extremely valuable. And as Richie mentioned, they're going to complement these younger players, you know, like the Riley Shans. And then you're going to have a guy like Dylan Larkin that's going to come up. Probably not this year. Maybe this year. He's a good player. Might be this
probably
year.
This year.
But you're going to have now a guy like Brad Richards who slots in kind of as that third line center, Rich.
Mm-hmm.
Most likely, maybe, you know, fourth line center, but probably third line center. And he had a pretty big role in the Hawks winning the Cup this past year. So the Red Wings always seem to be moving in the right direction.
Mike Green signs in Detroit, 3 years, $18 million, $6 million per season. Sort of always there was a lot of ties between, you know, the Mike Green and the Red Wings. Everyone thought that was a logical fit. You know, I think that people thought he'd get a much longer contract than he did. Obviously, we see that as the market was depressed this year when it came to free agents.
I think the market was accurate with him, Drew.
3 years? You think that I mean, in past years, he would have gone to more than 3 years.
Well, 5 years ago, he would have got 10 years, but, you know.
Yeah.
He's not the same. He doesn't defend well enough. And he's really, in reality, he played defensively behind Niskanen and behind John Carlson, who I thought improved defensively last year. John Carlson did. On the back end in Washington, excuse me. So he just doesn't defend well enough. You can't trust him in the corner. You can't trust his decision-making at times. You can't trust him at the end of games in a defensive situation. Having said all of that, shoots the puck extremely well, moves the puck extremely well, gifted offensively, can quarterback the power play. naturally and moves the puck out of his own zone to skilled players. And he shoots right. So he's everything they needed. You pay a little bit more for less term. I think that's a good deal. And I don't love Mike Green, but I like his fit here. He's not. He wouldn't be great on every team, but I think he'll be very good on Detroit.
Right, and a guy like Mike Green was one of the most sought-after free agents. As you mentioned, Detroit was one of those teams we talked about, and they ended up getting him. Mm-hmm. Three-year contract, obviously, as Richie said, you're not getting Chris Chelios here. You're getting a guy that has his deficiencies defensively, so they didn't sign him to a six-year deal. But he slots in behind Nicholas Cronwall. He's going to be a second-pairing guy, so you know he might play with a guy like Danny DeKeyser, even though Danny DeKeyser is almost too offensive-minded, so maybe they'll put him with a Brendan Smith. Jeff Blashill, new coach of the Wings, will have to figure that out. Yeah. But the point is, as Richie mentioned, he fits onto a team that has an overabundance of skill, right? So, you know, we talked about Gustav Nyquist and Tatar and Zetterberg and Datsyuk and all these players. It's a perfect fit. It was a good power play unit last year, and he fits right in there. And this is what they really needed. And, you know, again, going back to Brad Richards, I think he's another guy. Eric Cole didn't quite work out for them, but I think Brad Richards is a guy. They signed him to a one-year deal or a two-year deal?
One-year deal, $3 million.
Again, I mean, no risk with that one-year deal. Exactly. And he did a pretty good job for Chicago. I mean, he was there. He wasn't their main guy, but he played that important veteran role. And I think he still has a lot to offer this team.
It's funny, and Richards, like I always thought there was an issue with him fitting in Chicago speed-wise. I still think there was. I just think that team was that good. Detroit, not as fast up front as you think they are. So I don't know. You know, I don't know if that he'll be as maybe slowed down. I mean, he was slowed down by the fact that he couldn't keep up at times, I thought, in Chicago, and was limited with who he could play with and at least be effective. I think in Detroit, also, he can play the point on the power play, another factor there. So that'll be important. I think that their puck control style, a little more of the east-west, probably helps his game a bit. But, you know, he's going to be your 40-point guy, and that's all they want. They want a guy who can play on the power play. He can make players better, too, and he's a passer, right? Mm-hmm. He's a guy who complements scoring players, and they have, you know, they have good wings. Like, if you look at the guys they have on the squad, I mean, Nyquist can score on the wing. Thomas Tatar's a great shooter. Maybe he's a guy like that we'll put with Richards, who can pass the puck well. I think that there's some, and you know, if it's Teemu Pulkkinen and guys like that, they shoot it quite a bit. So yeah, I'll be interested to see who Richards plays with. But I would guess he'd probably center two younger players who are able to put the puck on net better than some others.
Well, I think what you see Detroit doing here is that their young guys are obviously, we know how long they take to develop their young guys and really are very patient with them. And now we're at the point where their young guys are stepping up and they're going to take on a more significant leadership role. But they're insulated by the quality of veteran that's still around them. So they're not just putting the young guys to the wolves. They still have, of course, Datsyuk and Zetterberg. And now they bring in Brad Richards. It's another layer of insulation to make sure that, you know, their centers are ready to go from, you know, playing a third line role to a second line role. You know, and so if they're not quite ready to start the season, Brad Richards can take that role, you know, for a little bit of time just to get them a little bit more acclimatized to what's expected of them.
Well, I think another element of this, Richie, is that, you know, Jeff Blashill comes in from Grand Rapids, obviously replacing Mike Babcock. And another element to this is Zetterberg and Datsyuk both have the ability to play center.
Absolutely.
But they also have the ability to put them together. And I think they're almost more effective when they're together. And you have Zetterberg playing the wing. Usually they always keep Datsyuk at center, and they'll move Zetterberg to the wing. And I think that's an element, too. That allows Jeff Blashill to put the two big guys on the top line. You know, we've seen Zetterberg and Datsyuk play with a Justin Abdelkader, for example. So with Brad Richards.
He's underrated, by the way.
Great player.
Yeah.
Speedy guy. You know, we've talked to Ken Daniels, who the voice of the Red Wings, about Abdelkader, and he basically talks about him saying he could be the next captain of the Red Wings. He's from Michigan and all that. So I think that's another option. You know, Brad Richards is a guy that ideally you don't want him as your number two center, but he has that ability. If you need to plug him in as your number two center, you can. You want him on the third line, ideally, but because Zetterberg and Datsyuk, they like to put those guys together once in a while, gives them that flexibility.
If a playoff start and Brad Richards is your number two guy, they're probably in a little bit of trouble. They might not even be in the playoffs at that point in time. But if Brad Richards is your only, like you saw on Chicago.
Well, it's like Chicago, similar idea. Yeah. Like, I mean, he can drop in and out. It doesn't, you know, so long as you have Datsyuk and Zetterberg to rely on in those middle spots, okay. Can you rely on them injury-wise is a question. Also, I talk about the speed up front and maybe the lack thereof, a little bit of the speed. The older guys have gotten a little slower. Some of their guys aren't necessarily the quickest. Doesn't mean they're a slow team. Maybe not as fast as some believe they are. Their back end, though, can skate real well.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, getting the puck out of your own zone and making sure you are supporting the forwards and things like that. So it's not as if they're like St. Louis kind of has that, you know, speed on the back end as well, and then some, you know, a little bit slower up front. Different style of play though. So it all depends. I think that these signings complement the roster though, and let's be clear. Detroit has had issues signing UFAs. I mean, there's bought out Steven Weiss, who they signed two summers back.
Yeah.
And that was a big contract. And they've had other guys who have kind of fizzled in, you know, guys they brought in, whether it be Eric Cole or Beamer, guys like that, who really haven't done, David Legwand, haven't done what they expected. So those are trades and free agency. So you can't give them a free pass here. But it looks to me like they're complimenting their top guys.
Another guy to watch there, I know Richie's brought this up, is Timu Pulkkinen, who played a little bit for the Red Wings last year. They really think that he's going to be, they're already kind of talking about him. Are talking about, you know, Pulkkinen being a potential guy that could be in the Calder race next year. He's a guy that also came up through Grand Rapids. Mm-hmm. Really talented guy.
Yeah. Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about some concussion research that's taking place here in Manitoba at the U of M. We'll be joined by concussion researcher Stephen Dubienski. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. You're listening to TSN 1290, 10:30 in the morning, Saturday, the 11th of July. This segment brought to you by Not Auto Corp. Be sure to visit their beautiful new luxury auto and art gallery at the corner of Waverly and McGilvery. For more information, check them out online at notautocorp.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the program Stephen Dubienski. Stephen is a master's candidate in sports psychology at the University of Manitoba, doing his research into concussion and post-concussion effects. Stephen, welcome to the program. How are you, young man?
Hi, Drew. Thanks for having me. Richard and Ezra, pleasure to be on the show. Big fan.
Thank you, Stephen. Obviously got you on in the interest of honesty with our audience. We've known you for a number of years at this point in time. We go way back. You're doing research into post-concussion activities among youth hockey players. Can you maybe sort of give our audience a little bit of a high-level explanation about what you are studying?
Right on. So what I'm studying is, once an athlete is returned from the return to play protocol, gone through the necessary 6-step procedure that's usually standard right now, and then they're still dealing with some psychological setbacks. So let's say an increased anxiety, stress, maybe some signs of depression, loss of confidence, and fear. And what I'm doing is applying a biofeedback intervention to hopefully have them overcome some of these setbacks. And the reason why I'm using biofeedback as my tool is, research in the past has been quite profound with soldiers returning to war with PTSD, and having biofeedback allows them to kind of get a better understanding of what's going on in their physiology and help them see in real time how their body reacts to these adverse stimuluses of, you know, an increased stress and increased pressure, and work on their respiration and their breathing technique to hopefully, you know, get a better control of these situations. So the purpose of this proposed research is to examine the use of a biofeedback intervention to assist, you know, concussed youth athletes in the sport of hockey cope with psychological concerns to return to play. And so just a little touch on biofeedback is the use of sophisticated equipment to note psychophysiological responses to stress through the use of audio and visual feedback, which is really beneficial to the participant that's actually taking place with the biofeedback, because they get to see what's actually happening within their body. And so much of a concussion is the invisible nature of the injury and the struggles that you don't actually kind of see you maybe improving over time. So this biofeedback allows this individual to see how their physiology reworks, and hopefully to what I'm focusing on is working on their breathing to, you know, to kind of overcome some of those setbacks.
So in layman's terms, and please correct me if I'm wrong, you know, you have an athlete who gets injured, they go through the protocol until they're deemed healthy by a medical professional, and then they return to the court or they return to the ice, and they're maybe not the same player. They're a little gun shy, for lack of a better word. Your research is going to help them sort of see how they are gun shy and sort of and help them work through their gun shy, their new gun shy nature as a result of the concussion?
Yeah. So the adverse stimulus that I subject them to is 3 minutes of concussion causing hits. So I put together 30 clips of just some severe hits that caused, you know, concussions in the NHL, major junior hockey, and things like this. So it brings and triggers those emotions that they kind of are experiencing when they show up at the rink. Well, you know, they're at home. There's so much with recovery to concussion that allows them to be on their own and some challenges, right? So these psychological aspects of stress, irritability, anxiety, loss of confidence start to rear their head in the recovery process and can be quite challenging and demeaning for these youth athletes to have them come and be the person and the player that they were. So what I'm trying to do is by allowing them to get a better control of their physiology, and when these situations start to happen, if they get to the rink, if they get on the ice and all of a sudden they're feeling stress and anxiety, while allowing them to know how to better cope with these and manage these circumstances through their training with respiration, you know, hopefully we can have them, you know, handle those situations and continue on to be the player that they were before the injury.
You've mentioned respiration a lot, and can you further kind of explain that concept of respiration training and how that's going to help hockey players, whether it's youth hockey players or senior hockey players that are experiencing those psychological setbacks from receiving a concussion, and what kind of specifically why that respiration training is going to help them deal with it, whether it's depression or anxiety?
Well, why I'm focusing on respiration, because the research has proved extremely beneficial with, like I mentioned, recovering from post-traumatic stress syndrome. So while you are hooked up to the biofeedback equipment and you are seeing a monitor, what that monitor is showing you is actually how to breathe at the optimal level to control these responses. So what I'm looking and training the individual and the participant to do is to learn how to breathe around six to seven breaths per minute. And research has shown if you can able to control your breathing at around 6 or 7 breaths per minute, you're able to control your physiology. And research has shown this reduces your stress and reduces your anxiety and gets you more control of these situations that start to feel like they are going out of control. And so respiration is just, you know, the single thing that I'm focusing on, as I believe, you know, it will help these individuals, you know, overcome some of these situations that they don't know why it's happening. And, you know, there's so many unknowns with regards to concussions that we don't know about. And so I'm, you know, particularly focusing on this, as we've seen now talking, you know, with the concussion clinic here in Winnipeg, that see 30 to 40 athletes potentially a week. Yes, 80 to 85% of them recover within 2 days, 1 week, 2 weeks. But what's with the 20 and 15% that are taking that extra long, are really struggling psychologically with returning to play? So yes, there's definitely, you have to go through the 6-step return to play protocol. It's essential. But after that, let's work with these guys. Let's kind of implement a physiotherapy aspect to the concussion recovery, and that's what I'm trying to do with the use of biofeedback.
Yeah, and at the end of the interview, we're going to let people know, parents and hockey players know, how to get involved with the current research project you're doing. You know, I wanted to ask you, you hear a lot about the current lawsuit, the ongoing lawsuit that was filed against the NHL by some of the former players in U.S. court about you know, concussions, and you know, you hear about all of the concussion related issues that former enforcers like Derek Boogaard and Bob Probert, you know, suffered, not just physiological but also psychological, which led to addiction, and unfortunately, you know, in their case, you know, they lost their life. Do you still think that with all of this is actually positive news, and it's going to keep concussions and the psychological impacts they have kind of at the forefront, and people are going to realize that really it's not something that you can really mess around with?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the real danger with these individuals is potentially the second, third, and fourth concussion that they sustain, with potentially not recovering from the first one. So as research shows now, let's say you have a concussion and it injures the frontal lobe aspect of your brain. Well, that's your pleasure center, right? So if that area of your brain gets, you know, damaged, you know, that's going to have effect. And especially then with the side and the temporal lobes, you know, that's responsible for your memory and basically your emotion, right? So if we can work with these youth to have them better control these situations and these psychological setbacks right when they're happening with the concussion, maybe we can prevent these athletes from going and putting and taking painkillers and really getting to these dark places and not knowing how to handle all these situations that they're now facing later on in their career. So, you know, hopefully we can be preemptive here in hopefully getting these youth on track at an early age, and we can maybe cause some of these setbacks and some of these psychological situations that we're seeing now arise with hockey players in their, you know, mid now early 30s. Where they don't know what's going on, and they're, you know, they're coming to a result where, unfortunately, sometimes they take their own life, which is extremely unfortunate, because potentially if they got the right help at the right time, potentially, you know, hopefully I think that is can be avoidable, and hopefully maybe they don't have to resort to the drug abuse that we see come from it as well.
Do you think the physicality of the sports and the risk of concussions is going to push parents away from enrolling their kids in these types of sports?
That is definitely a huge risk and a huge danger that we see organizations like the NFL and the NHL are definitely aware of. We see now in youth football in the States, enrollment for U14, U12 is down up to 15 to 20%. And we saw for the first time the NFL spend millions of dollars this year on marketing to moms and dads and having a two-week camp where they're trying to promote how safe the game can be. And really, as we, you know, venture forward, it continues to be all about the education. The more we educate this and the more we train these athletes at a young age to really, you know, respect the game and not target the head. Yes, playing a contact sport, concussions are pretty much inevitable. You know, you can't 100% fully prevent them, but the more we educate the youth, the more we educate the parents, and the more we educate the coaches, hopefully we can make the game safer, and we can see the game prosper for many years to come. But it's definitely, you know, it starts at the grassroots, and we can move forward from there.
Steven, you mentioned that you're primarily focused on youth hockey players, but if I'm to understand correctly, you're also going to be doing some research into the effects on adult hockey players and adults in general.
Yes.
You're anticipating differences in the feedback and the biofeedback between, say, younger people who suffer a concussion and older people, given that brains are at different stages of development?
No, that's a great point. And why I'm so interested in working predominantly with youth, and now we've extended the research to open up to an older demographic, is your brain is continually developing into your early 20s. So what are the effects of a youth that has a concussion while their brain is still developing, like you said, for 15, 20 years down the road? But I believe, you know, with the use of mental training and biofeedback that we can, you know, start to strengthen the brain. Sometimes I use the analogy, when we break an arm, a doctor can tell you there's a fracture in there, you're going to put a cast on it for 6 weeks, let it rest. Same type of thing with the concussion. You've got to let it rest. You've got to essentially do the 6 steps to return to play. But after you break your arm is weakened. What do? You go see a physiotherapist and you strengthen that arm to get it back. Well, after you return from concussion, you know, you've weakened your brain, essentially you've injured it. What are we going to do now to re-strengthen that brain, to kind of program the neural tracts that potentially have been damaged in the frontal lobe or the temporal lobe, to, you know, to have these, you know, areas of the brain working optimally and strong moving forward, right? So that's kind of the ideology that I use, and kind of where I'm going with this is, you know, what, in quotations, physiotherapy aspect are we doing to strengthen the brain and bringing it back to the level that it was pre-concussion?
Steven, if people are interested in participating in the study or finding more information, how do they go about doing that?
You can either go to my website, stevendubiensky.com. So that's stephendubiensky.com. Or you can email me directly at info@stevendubiensky.com. So it's an exciting opportunity that has been fully approved by the University of Manitoba. We've got a great feedback and a lot of interest. And so if you know anyone, a friend, a daughter, friend, a son, a relative, anyone that might benefit from going through this intervention that you've seen struggle psychologically from a concussion, you know, have them contact me. We're looking to start the study mid-August. We've got a few participants already going, so we're looking for a few more, and it's going to take 7 weeks of your time, twice per week for about an hour with the biofeedback equipment, and everything is confidential, identity and everything like that, so feel free to contact me. I'd be happy to hear from you.
Terrific. Stephen, we'll let you go on one final question. As someone who used to beat me on the tennis courts on a regular basis, as we were growing up here in the Manitoba junior tennis scene, and as the former captain of the Georgia Southern University Eagles tennis team, Federer or Djokovic tomorrow?
Well, there's no denying how much of a fan I am of Federer. It was a heartbreaking loss last year, 5-setter in the final. He's playing, I think, better this year. He served out of his mind against Murray. So if he can keep that game, go Fed all the way, it'd be neat to see a guy of his age do the things that he does on a tennis court. I don't think we'll ever see a tennis player like this again. And we got to cherish it while in the present while we can.
More importantly, though, how good was Drew's serve? Was it a hard one to return?
It was no compare. Stephen's was a far better than mine.
Drew and I had some great battles at Glendale and Taylor. No doubt about that. You're a good competitor, Drew.
Thank you. Only one of us got a tennis scholarship, and it wasn't me. Stephen,
hey,
thanks
guys,
very
thank
much.
You so much.
Concussion researcher Stephen Dubienski. Appreciate your time, Stephen.
Right on, gentlemen. Huge fan. Thank you.
Take care, Stephen. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is an easy one.
Well, after last week's disaster.
I got point blank. That one's easy.
Okay. Well, you know,
my mom was beaking me on that one. I didn't get, was a wrecking ball last
wrecking
week.
Wrecking ball last week.
I was just a little distracted.
Yeah, a lot on your mind?
Yeah, I was thrown off, but this one, I got this one.
Okay,
playing.
There you go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, or apparently Richard's Bruce Springsteen Trivia Hour.
Can we get Stevie Van Zandt on the show just to talk about music?
Or the Sopranos, which one would you want?
No, music. Well, Sopranos, too, I mean.
Silvio Dante. Yeah. I wouldn't mind hearing
a
little
great
bit
character.
About that.
Drew likes his pasta, El Dante.
Underground Garage is one of the best. I don't know if he still does it. Does he still do it, Rich?
I don't know.
Underground Garage? Underground Garage was one of the best music radio shows I've ever listened to on satellite radio. Just incredible.
Okay. Let's talk about the Colorado Avalanche for the final 8 or so minutes of the program on this Saturday morning as we go around the Central Division and talk about the moves. We'll start with the...
Well, I mean, before you get into it, Drew, it's interesting. You know, Chicago has this change. Obviously, Dallas now brings in Niemi, as we mentioned, and the trade that those two teams have made.
Mm-hmm.
St. Louis kind of seems to me to kind of move sideways there. They have Brouwer, and I think Brouwer's probably worse than Oshie, so maybe a little bit worse, but not significantly worse. Nashville brings... We'll talk about all those teams, but there's a lot of change in the Central Division, and the Jets have stayed stagnant, so it's interesting to see where they'll land and all that.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Let's start with the acquisition of Carl Soderberg. They get him from the Boston Bruins for a draft pick, or they get his negotiating rights, and then they sign him to a 5-year, $23.75 million contract.
Like that contract.
Well, we'd speculate
like
that,
Soderberg.
We had speculated that he's probably going to make some pretty good money, right? We mentioned that as the UFA of the week there. So, I mean, do I think it's probably a little bit too much for a guy who hasn't proven a ton yet? Maybe he has, but I mean, at the end of the day, he's going to be playing, well, it depends, right? Because where are you going to play McKinnon? Are you going to play McKinnon at center, or are you going to play McKinnon at wing? And Duchesne is probably, if that's going to be the case, he's going to line up as your third line center. If you're going to play one of them at wing, you're going to line up as your second line guy. He adds skill, he adds size. And with O'Reilly out, it's kind of a good change there, I think. O'Reilly's better than him,
mm-hmm.
but a good replacement more expensive. Considering the costs and everything else.
Yeah, very different player. You got to talk about the Ryan O'Reilly trade, Drew, here. Mm-hmm. You know, for those who missed that trade. You know,
Ryan O'Reilly and Jamie McGinn go to Buffalo. Yep. In exchange, they get defenseman Nikita Zadorov, forward Mikhail Grigorenko, forward JT Compher, and a 2015 second-round pick.
Now, just quickly here. Not a huge Mikhail Grigorenko fan. He really fell out of favor there, Richie, with Tim Murray in Buffalo, missing practices.
Mm-hmm.
They sent him back to the QMJHL and all that.
Buffalo mishandled his career from the start.
The previous brass did too. Regier, and they rushed
him. You hear, you know, you talk to you know people in Buffalo, and he doesn't have the best attitude
for
either.
Sure.
So
for sure.
I'm just saying, for me, the key to that
trade. Who is his junior coach?
Patrick Waugh.
That's right.
Yeah.
So, and that's a factor. It's a good point, Rich. Mm-hmm. You know, now Patrick Waugh knows him a little bit. He's familiar with him. But to me, Rich, the JT Compher, you listen to what scouts say, he's a highly regarded mm-hmm. prospect. Mm-hmm. He might not be a guy that steps right into the Colorado Avalanche and plays a full-time role. He'll probably be given a chance. But he's a guy that was drafted, I think he was an early second rounder in 2013, American player. But to me, the key is Zadorov.
100%.
Zadorov is a guy that, to me, you look at the Colorado Avalanche, and what have they been lacking? They've been lacking that skilled offensive defenseman.
Left-side defenseman.
Left-side defenseman.
Play both ways.
20 years old.
He's very young. Yeah. He was a high draft pick by the Buffalo Sabres. So, to me, that's the key to this. And, you know, you mentioned Soderberg. You know, Rich mentions, you know, is he going to be a second-line center, third-line center? Because you have Duchesne penciled in as the first-line center there. These are all good problems to have. I think the Colorado Avalanche made really good moves. We haven't even mentioned Francois Beauchemin, who might be towards the end of his career. He was a key part of that Anaheim Ducks team that went to the Western mm-hmm. Conference Finals. He might be a little gray in the tooth, but he still gets the job done. Great defenseman.
Well, gray in the tooth.
I thought gray in the beard maybe would be.
Yeah, long in the tooth, gray in the beard.
Yeah, I kind of mixed up
if
my...
If your tooth is gray, I think that's gangrene. You might want to get that pulled or something.
Gray in the beard a little bit is what I meant to say. But I really like these moves. I do. And Tyson Berry's a great defenseman. Eric Johnson, I think, is underrated. You know, this Colorado Avalanche team, you know, they missed the playoffs after winning the division 2 years ago. And I think with the moves they've made, to me, they're a team that's I have penciled in as getting back into the playoffs
well,
this year.
I'll say this. You know, I also had a Blake Como.
Yeah, Blake Como, 3 years, $7.2 yep. million.
Good Saskatchewan boy.
Beauchemin, 3 years, $13.5 million.
Okay, so in UFA, did they overterm out Soderberg? He's 29. Did they pay him an extra, you know, maybe a little bit too much per year, but it's just an extra year? I'd be more comfortable if Soderberg's contract was 3 or 4 years. It's 5. Blake Como, does he really deserve a 3-year deal? He hasn't really established himself, played in many teams, can score a bit.
Mm-hmm.
I think a little bit one-dimensional, probably more like I'd prefer. I don't even
Como's
love,
a good player. Though.
I don't love that deal.
On your third
I don't
line,
like that deal, actually.
On your third line,
yeah.
Como is a guy that on Pittsburgh, they tried him on the line with Sidney Crosby. I think on a team like Colorado, a third-line role for him is good. He can chip in 15
yeah.
goals, 35 points.
You like it more than I do, fair enough. I mean, and then you look at Beauchemin. I like the fit, left-side guy. Another extra year too long, I think, you know, based on the fact that he plays a hard game. I prefer 2 years. But, hey, guys, when you enter UFA, when you enter the free agent market to spend money, you're going to overpay either by year or by term.
I thought Como would have been a good fit for the Jets, actually.
Maybe, but I wouldn't like that contract. 3 years, 2.4 a year, he hasn't established himself enough, right? He's a one-year contract guy to me. Maybe two. In any event, what you have there, knows, and Zadorov, how does he perform? Is he, you know, he played in the NHL last year. Do they thrust him into a top four role? And if so, how does he fare? That's a question that I obviously will remain unanswered for now. But you look at their offense as a whole; it's a very good offense. Now they've added Zadorov, who can move the puck. We know Beauchemin can move the puck. Mm-hmm. As you mentioned, Barry and Johnson, both of them can move the puck. I even like Barry doing it better than Johnson. Johnson is a guy they need to be healthy. He's got a big shot. You know, they have solid goaltending. Grigorenko's a little bit of a wild card.
Yep.
I just think O'Reilly, which I like his Swiss Army knife kind of style of play. He can play penalty kill, power play. But, like, is Ryan O'Reilly the second coming like Brian Trotsche here? I mean, let's calm down. So I like the return they get for him.
Yes.
They don't give him massive amounts of money.
He wasn't going to re-sign there. They weren't going to be able to afford to re-sign
his
him.
His contract was absurd. So I like what Colorado did here. I like what they did here.
They're going to lose an asset, and instead they get a number of pieces that are going to fill in on their roster. And if Grigorenko, you know, regains what he had with Patrick Waugh.
I don't even care. If Zadorov reaches his peak level,
sure,
that doesn't even matter.
Trade.
And then they get the second and JT Compher.
It's like you said, if you don't get JT Compher, I don't like it as much. But to me, the Grigorenko is kind of almost, I think Buffalo's happy to give him away.
Yeah, probably.
I think he fell out of favor there. With the kind of brass, if you want to call it that, Tim Murray and the Buffalo Sabres management, and Zadorov is the key, as we mentioned. I mean, they kind of get a future number one defenseman there. He's not quite ready to call him a number one defenseman,
mm-hmm.
but he's young enough and he's got that skill, Richie, that he could be a guy that kind of, you know, once especially Tyson Berry and Eric Johnson mm-hmm. get a little older, he's the guy that could be their number one defenseman in the future.
Absolutely. The Central Division is just going to be an absolute beast again next year. It's
Which
amazing.
Makes it great to watch if you're a fan of the Jets because you get to go to all the games and see top-end talent.
That's right.
That's why you're happy NHL hockey's back.
It's clearly the best division in the NHL. I think it's safe to say that.
I would agree with you there. That's it for this Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to our guests, the Jeremy Rutherford from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, George Johnson from the Calgary Herald, and Stephen Dubienski, a concussion researcher at the University of Manitoba. In case you missed any of the program, it's available for download on iTunes, on tsn1290.ca, and on our website, illegalcurve.com. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is illegalcurve.com. Thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Deli, Zappia Group Realty, Royal Sports, and Not Auto Corp. Big thanks to Corey Sanders for producing this program. For Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. Stay tuned for Toronto Blue Jays baseball coming up in about an hour's time here on TSN 1290.